Welcome to Canucks Central at Noon. Your Vancouver Canucks live here.
Drops off for Horvat, back to Edler, then to Horvat at the slot. He scores! Bo Horvat in overtime!
On the home of hockey, Sportsnet 650.
Landeskog turned it over to Horvat, right to the slot. Pettersson scores! Is there anything this kid can't do?
Here's Scott Rintoul and Mick Nizar.
The win streak's over. Win streak's over. That's a big takeaway, isn't it, Bick? I mean, come on. How are the Canucks not six games deep into this winning streak?
Remember when there was a time when it was like, oh, man, I really hope they just win three in a row.
They've won 14 of 18, and their loss comes with the bonus point on the weekend. They get 3 of 4 in two tough places against two good teams, back-to-back games. They use a different goaltender in each one. There you go. Vancouver Canucks. 11 points ahead of where they were through 53 games a year ago. They sit 65 right now. That's 3 points up on the Edmonton Oilers in the Pacific Division.
And the pace was you got to be 2 points better per month, right? So what is this, month four? They need to be 8 points better, as you just suggested?
This is month five, but yeah, they're through 4 months, correct.
They're well ahead of that track. And it doesn't look like it's going to slow down, right?
So, well, they've got the two already for February, don't they?
Yeah. But they're on track as far as what they wanted to accomplish this year. Again, it's a big jump, but they're on track to make that huge jump.
And that's important for two reasons, the pace you talk about. The first reason is this. As great as it is that they're 3 points up on the Oilers and 4 points up on Vegas and 5 points up on Calgary, go down the list in the division race. What's more important is that they're 9 points up on Winnipeg and Chicago. They're 10 points up on Nashville right now. That margin is massive.
Sad and I kind of got into this on the postgame show last week, Saturday, that let's say something really goes wrong and they end up wild card too, right? Does that change your perception of what this season is?
It all depends on how they get there, of course.
Sure.
It's not always just the what, it's the how.
Yeah.
And that is a big part of the equation. They have the same lineup, they're all healthy, and all of a sudden they start to fall apart down the stretch when the games get tougher. It'll change your perception of the season. Absolutely it will. When you step back and say, did this team take a step, you'll have to concede that.
And I guess this is where I struggle at times, because everyone's getting excited, and that's important, and we all should. I keep saying don't change your expectations on what this season is, right?
So here's the second reason I think it's important what they've done in this 14-3-1 stretch. They've separated themselves from the likes of Nashville, Chicago, and Winnipeg. That is just such a big gap.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like that many points at this point is impossible to overcome.
It's too much.
It feels like it. It might not be,
mm-hmm.
but it feels like it right now. Here's the second reason. They're going to go through a tough stretch in March. We live in the here and now. We're basing it on the way they play, the results they chalk up. You can't get too far ahead of yourself. Their toughest stretch is coming up in March.
They play a lot of games.
It's 2.5 weeks against good teams.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to go through a stretch like that. Right now, hey, they played the Islanders. They played Carolina. Those are good teams, but they started this trip against San Jose. They're going to finish this trip with Minnesota. They're going to play a stretch where every night out, it's a good team. It's about 2.5 weeks long. And as you mentioned, the volume's going to be high as well. And that, to me, is going to be a defining stretch as far as seeding is concerned.
Mm-hmm.
Because you and I have been on the same page for a bit now. This team's going to the playoffs. It's just how they're going to get there and what the point total is going to be and what the matchup ends up being in round number one. But they have the look and feel of a playoff team, barring something catastrophic from an injury point of view.
And I think what we do is just at the end of the season, you have your expectations that you set out at the beginning of the season. And once it finishes, you grade how they performed relative to the expectation. So mine was, make the playoffs. If it's wild card two, that to me, I say, C+, B-, you did what you set out to do. But if it carries on and they win division, well, suddenly there it's A+. And that's what we're talking about when the expectation stays the same, but your evaluation of what happened can differ. So moving forward, obviously, you want them to finish a task that they have an opportunity, right? But if things sputter, it's not the end of the world to say, boy, they really missed this opportunity. No, the opportunity was to make the playoffs. That did they accomplish that relative to your expectations at the beginning of the year?
Yes. You'll have to concede yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And it changes the specter of the JT Miller trade. It does all of those things. It gets that off the table. You don't have to worry about that going into next season. There's a bunch of reasons it makes sense, especially for the development of these young players. The Bessers, the Pettersons, the Horvats, the Hughes, Jacob Markstrom. It will be a massive development for him to play playoff games this year. That is a big-time development here in Vancouver. And in case you missed it, the latest on Jacob Markstrom, I reported this on Saturday. I know others have talked about it as well. The Canucks have made some progress there. They're not home yet. They're not, hey, this is imminent coming down this week. There's been some progress in contract talks, but it's going to take a little bit of time. That's where they sit right now. There's nothing contentious, but you understand on Jacob Markstrom's side why the ask is what it is and the comparables that side would float. And on the Canucks side, they're sitting there saying, listen, guys, this is what the goaltending market is. This is maybe not what you want, but that's what the market is. And the other guy here is pretty good too. So we have to have an eye on that. We can't be irresponsible when it comes to us putting this contract in place.
Part of it is also, I know fans want the certainty of, hey, look, this guy's exciting. He's coming to his own. He's hitting his prime. We'd love to have this for so many years. But you also have to be careful with what's happening in the moment, right? Do you want to distract a Jacob Markstrom down the stretch? You might just have to be uncomfortable with the idea that this doesn't get done till either the deadline, the trade deadline, or well into the season, or well into the off season, however long that stretch is for the Vancouver Canucks.
Well, this is something Friedman has talked about before with certain organizations. St. Louis is one that comes to mind. Yes, it's easy to use St. Louis because they just won, but he has said, look, they waited a long time before they got the Braden Schenn deal done. They might have Pietrangelo back, but don't expect that deal's coming down the pipe and they don't feel a sense of urgency. Oh, do we trade him at the trade deadline?
Mm-hmm.
They have a confidence, okay, if this guy walks, we have a backup plan. And we'll see what the Canucks do in that negotiation. The goaltending market's a really interesting one, and it's a different conversation than some of the players we're talking about. But we'll see where the Canucks' confidence level is there. That, okay, look, worst case scenario, we don't get something done with Jacob Markstrom. What's plan B? Because they have that scenario worked out too.
We've talked about the idea that why should Jacob Markstrom want to sign right now? There's that security of it, but he keeps building himself a better case. There's also just the human element of him being, hey, I want this team to win. And if I get distracted on the idea of what my contract looks like and all of those things, that's just a distraction you just don't need. If he's putting blinders on and says, I want to win right now, I'm focused on how I can be a better goalie. As we've heard him say, he's like, big game coming up on Monday. If he's just focused on how he can be a better goalie versus Boston, versus Minnesota, whatever the next opponent is, then that's fine too. And I saw your tweet, and it does feel like, again, nothing contentious, it just the more, as we progress through the season, it feels like both parties have a common goal. It's just going to take some time to get there.
Scott Rinto, Bick Nazar, this is Canucks Central. Want your feedback on the conversation as well. 650-650 is the Subway text message inbox. There's a number of places we could go here. Let's start with Quinn Hughes, who continues to rack up the points, now leads all rookies in scoring. He's got 39. He's two up on Cale Makar. I understand there's a 10-game spread. Makar has played last games. But Hughes is having the surge right now that Makar was having 6 weeks, 2 months ago, where every single night there seemed to be multiple points, there were goals. He felt like a lock. He felt like a no-brainer Calder winner, and that is not the case any longer. It's not just Hughes in the conversation,
man,
but because of what Hughes has done, the conversation has changed dramatically.
Like the Islanders game on his own was so special, and that's coming off of the heels of what he did in the Sharks game. It man, these performances are so stunning that this is new for Canucks fans. We were having these same conversations last year with Elias Pettersson, that a player this dynamic at this age, we have rarely seen it for Canucks players, and that gets Canucks fans excited. As far as D-men go, this is uncharted territory. That's how special these performances are. You need to have those moments over the course of a season to, you know, have that in your ledger to say, hey, this is the reason I should win a trophy, you know, for the awards. And he put two back-to-back performances that are, you could put that up against any of Cale Makar's games. And it's, both guys are sharing a very strong argument right now.
What impresses you more, that he is doing it at this point of the season when some tend to hit the rookie wall, or that he's been a better defender through his first 50 and change games in the league than you would have expected going in? What's more impressive to you?
I think it's the defending. The rookie wall, I'm not sure what to... I think it's key that he did play those five games last year, and there's a way to build that offseason plan for him, and you know, you get that communication with guys like Pettersson, who, you know, he would have seen Pettersson hitting that wall yesterday or last year to, you know, have some level of communication with him to be like, hey, this is something you should look out for when you go into your offseason training. You still have to go through it, but he had a, you know, level of communication with at least the training staff, whatever it is, to set him up for success. This defending prowess that he's showing, I mean, I expected this in year two, year three maybe, and as you suggest, it's 50 some odd games in, and he's proving himself to be a top pairing number one D-man.
He looks fantastic. He really does. We get this text, the text message inbox coming in that says, and this is from Christian, saw the NHL post the rookie of the month goes to Dominik Kubalík of Chicago with 14 points. Why not give Quinn Hughes the recognition he deserves? He pulled 14 points in the month of January. He's 20 years old and now has passed Cale Makar in rookie points this season. Why does it seem like the NHL bashes the Canucks when they have success? Wanted to know your thoughts on this. Well, there's no wrong choice.
I don't have a good answer for you.
There's no wrong choice between those two players to start with. Kubalík mm-hmm. had a fantastic month. Mm-hmm. He has been a really important reason why Chicago has played itself back into this conversation as far as being a playoff team. People have been wondering, well, I don't know how long this is going to last. So it's not as though he's a bad choice for the award. Mm-hmm. Why they chose him over Quinn Hughes, you'd have to ask them. But those would be a couple of the factors. As far as the NHL bashing the Canucks when they have success, man, the talk of the All-Star game, if you talk to many of the insiders in the business, were the three players the Canucks sent.
Mm-hmm.
As much as was going on there, and Barzal beating McDavid, these three, in two cases, young players, and the other, first-time All-Star in Jacob Markstrom, these guys showing up, everybody was talking about them. Everybody was buzzing about Quinn Hughes coming out of that All-Star game. So I don't see it as the NHL not wanting to highlight Quinn Hughes or the Vancouver Canucks in general.
I would also just say this stuff doesn't matter anymore. If the Canucks were in the spot where Anaheim is right now or something like that, and it's like, oh, you want to feel good about something about the season, man, just look at the standings. Just look at the standings, and that's how you can feel good about what's happening this season. I know you want more, but what's really important, those are frivolous acknowledgments to what should be a bigger pursuit. And the bigger pursuit is go to the playoffs, do something special. And the Canucks are primed to do exactly that at some point in the duration of these guys' careers. But right now, specifically, they're in first place in the Pacific. I just don't have the energy to get worked up over player of the month, or rookie of the month in January.
I mentioned this in my show. The real credit to where the Vancouver Canucks have come as a team is the fact that we do not talk about the Calder Trophy this year.
I do want to talk about something else, though.
And we'll get there, but the fact that we don't talk about that is the greatest indication of the corner the Canucks seem to have turned from a team perspective than anything else. 2 years ago, you better be damn sure you're talking about Brock Besser. Hey, don't just hand over the Calder just yet. Brock Besser, get him in the conversation. How many goals are you going to score? Is he going to break Pavel Bure's record? You guys need to pay attention. Last year, Elias Pettersson. Guys, wake up. He's not this skinny kid who doesn't deserve to be in the league. He is the face of the franchise going forward. You guys better damn well give him his recognition. Because the teams were bad, Bic. They were. And one was a little more competitive than the other. But overall, they were bad teams. They were Tier 3 teams. Well, now there's a Tier 2 team here. And by having a Tier 2 team and one that is performing on the upper end of Tier 2 right now, it has changed that conversation entirely.
Another thing that's probably changed is your habits of how often you've done the lottery simulator. Have you even logged on? What was that website? Tankathon.com or something
sure,
like that?
Sure, something like that.
Have you even logged on to that this year?
No.
But at February of last year, we were all screenshotting, hey guys, did the simulator today. Canucks with a 23% chance to get a top three pick. They got it this time. Or a 8% chance to get a number one overall pick. They got it this time. And we would screenshot that for the retweets and the likes. And that's all fun and games. But has anybody logged onto that site in Vancouver this year? That stuff just doesn't matter.
This text comes in my opinion, who should be the Calder favorite right now is minutes. He's eating big minutes and replaced Edler when he was hurt. Since then, he's taken over. He's transformed our back end. He's keeping Tanev healthy. His point production is there. He runs our power play. He's a breakout machine. His overall team impact is huge. When Makar was hurt, were the Avs in trouble? Hughes gets hurt, we are in trouble. It will be very noticeable. His play is improving as the season goes on. I think this needs to be emphasized. His all-star appearance, impact, and presence. He's trending to be the winner if he stays healthy, in my opinion, from the unsigned text on the Subway text line.
Can I present a new idea to you?
Sure. That'd be great.
I don't care about the Calder anymore. One of those two guys, very deserving. But I wanted to pose this question to you.
Sure.
How far away is Quinn Hughes from a Norris nomination this year? Now,
do you mean top three?
He's not going to win.
He's a finalist?
It.
How far away is he from that?
Yeah,
or how far away is he from getting votes, which are 1 to 5, in the Norris conversation?
I was just kind of going through it. Like, John Carlson's going to win. That's his award this year.
Yep.
That's done. And I think Petrangelo, Hedman, probably your 2-3s.
Yossi's going to be in the conversation, especially if Nashville makes more of a surge. Mm-hmm. What he's doing this year has been remarkable.
But how, like, Quinn Hughes and Cale Makar, to be honest, how far away are they to being in that conversation of joining Petrangelo and Hedman? Is there a way that they can penetrate that this year? Or, I guess what you're asking is probably fair, do they merit any Norris votes this year?
Since I've seen how this award gets handed out forever, they're not either of them going to be finalists. I find it hard to believe. This is more a pay your dues award than any other I see handed out.
That's fair.
It really is, man.
But now
there are times where you go, I can't believe we haven't recognized Drew Doughty. I think we need to do something. I can't believe we haven't recognized Victor Hedman. It's high time we did something.
Mark Giordano, it's your time.
It's your time. This award more than any other.
That's fair.
And that said, right now, neither of them are top threes.
Actually, that's not fair, but that's the reality of the situation. Mm-hmm. But just judging it off what the spirit of the award is, right?
So if I'm a voter and I get 5 votes,
mm-hmm.
I can see one of those votes going to either Hughes or Makar. And by season's end, there's a possibility that there's a 4th or 5th place vote in there. There might be somebody who sees those guys on a regular basis and says, I'll tell you what, I know he's not going to win the award, but I'm willing to give him my 3rd place vote. I could see them getting votes. There's no chance, as you said, Carlson's getting the award. I don't see much of a case for either of them being top three at this point. But the fact that we're even having the discussion tells you everything.
It's not a wild idea, though, right? They're probably easily in the top 10, both of those players. And that's what we're talking about when it comes to this season. Because when we have this conversation of Hughes, Makar, Calder Trophy, it does almost limit their impact, or at least the perceived impact of what their seasons are right now. It's just like, oh, they're having great rookie years. No, they're having great defenseman years. They both just happen to be eligible for the Calder.
Yeah, it gets to be a very difficult conversation because this award, if you don't have a requisite point total, we don't really consider you, which probably isn't fair given what the award is for.
Jacob Slavin would obviously be a high-ranking guy.
Miro Heiskanen should probably, if you want to talk top 10, there's a guy who should be in the top 10, but he's only got 25 points, so some people will forget about him and they won't think he's doing a great job down in Dallas just because they look down that point total and they go, he's a long way down the list. The award becomes difficult to sort through, but I think your proposition is a fair one, that these guys could garner some consideration. Hughes right now is on everybody's radar around the league. Mm-hmm. I know we had the texter earlier say, hey, the NHL is not giving the Canucks their due. They're not giving Quinn Hughes his due. Everyone around the league, he's one of the players on the nightly highlight pack that they're looking for.
Yeah.
Because he's doing things like that spin move at the blue line. He's doing things like the overtime goal against the New York Islanders. He is so smooth and he's so much fun to watch. How can you not be attracted to what he's doing?
Especially, and we kind of said this on the tail end of last week. It's like they're going in the East to play these games, and here's an opportunity for them to make an impression on perhaps a bunch of people that aren't watching them nightly. And we get to see it day to day, and you see the incremental changes when, you know, he's done some fancy stuff, no doubt, but now there's just a different confidence level. There's a different swagger, and he's on a goal-scoring run here, too. We notice the changes as they happen week to week, month to month, but if you're just discovering Quinn Hughes this past 2-3 weeks, you're blown away. You're absolutely blown away.
Text comes in, Quinn Hughes has taken the team from 28th to 6th. How is he not in Hart Trophy conversation?
Slow down.
Pump the brakes.
I thought I was jumping the, I mean, I was prepared to be like, oh, let's have the Norris conversation. Hart Trophy.
Pump the brakes.
There's a lot of candidates for that one.
I'll tell you this. There is a good conversation to be had as to most important player on the team. And I can see a lot of fans voting for Hughes as most important player on the team because of the position he happens to play.
Mm-hmm.
When you start talking about up front, hey, we know who the most talented player is, and I do want to get to the Elias Pettersson conversation because what we saw yesterday looks a lot different in early February than what we saw last year. It really does, and he was sensational over the course of both games, but yesterday he really stood out. He was the best player on the ice in that game against Carolina, and Carolina had some guys going too. But I thought Pettersson was the best player on the ice yesterday. So I want to get to that. But he's in a conversation up front. Has JT Miller been their best forward? Has Pettersson been their best forward? Who's more important up front? Markstrom obviously is in the conversation for most important. Hughes, I could see winning the fan vote because how much better their blue line is, how much different he is from any other defenseman they have. And I actually... he would get my vote. Perry and James had a good poll question last week on the starting lineup. They said, which player would have the most detrimental impact on the Canucks if he were to be lost for a decent amount of time down the stretch? Quinn Hughes would probably get my vote.
I think I'm at the stage where
he is the hardest of all of them to replace, even for 4 weeks.
The height of Pettersson...
he's fantastic.
Might be the answer, but the consistency of what Quinn Hughes has done, and you know, let's not say Elias Pettersson hasn't been consistent, it's just that might be harder to replicate because there isn't a guy to step up to do that. Like the cascading set of issues that causes is probably Quinn Hughes.
Sure, and that's exactly mm-hmm. why I go there, is that, okay, who jumps in? Jordy Benn jumps in. Okay. Hey, there's value to Jordy Benn and having him on the roster, and certainly played a lot better at the beginning of the season than he has, and he hasn't been in the lineup a lot lately. Quinn Hughes comes out, and that's the next step. Man, there's a lot of minutes that need to be eaten up, and I know it's not like for like. Let's say, and I'm knocking on wood, and this is hypothetical, God forbid, Pettersson was lost for mm-hmm. 2 to 4 weeks. Okay, pushing Brandon Sutter into the middle isn't exactly your answer there, but could JT Miller play center for 3 weeks and
someone
have a different
on the
winger?
Wing. Yeah,
you could see your way through that a little easier than losing Quinn Hughes and what he means to this team right now.
He's, okay, just exactly what you're talking about though, right? It's easier to cover up the cracks if Elias Pettersson's gone than what Quinn Hughes would do. And also it's the stylistical version of that. No one's going to play like Quinn Hughes, but a lot of what has happened over the course of these 2 months where he's taken his game to the next level, he's kind of the driver of how this team plays at times. And you've got to change all of that too. Like there's a certain level of freedom that is given to Quinn Hughes that Troy Stetcher, Jordy Benn, whoever it is playing, is not going to even attempt. And players read off of that. You see Quinn Hughes and Elias Pettersson, how they start doing these little passes. That gets broken up, too. That sort of chemistry, that sort of understanding of where I can go because Quinn Hughes can manipulate defenders, that's all gone. It becomes more simplistic. Someone like Thatcher Demko can step in for Jacob Markstrom, and it stays similar. JT Miller can fill in for Elias Pettersson to some degree, and you can still get that defensive value he provides.
Guys, can we please talk about Yes, we can. And we will next right here on Canuck Central with Scott Rintel and Bick Nizar on your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Now more of Canuck Central on the official home of the Vancouver Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Here's JT Miller to the left, half boards for Pettersson. Behind the net for Miller in the Carolina zone for Pettersson. One timer, he scores right along the goal line to the bottom of the left circle. Elias Pettersson has his second of the game, 23rd of the season. The Canucks have tied the game at three.
Yeah, we can talk about it. And we will right here. Scott Rintel, it's Bick Nizar. Get yourselves in on the conversation as one of our texters did today, Christian, who sent a text message in earlier. We were going to get to this, but thank you for sending in the text. Can we talk about that impossible angle goal by Petey? Not many players can do that. Pure talent. Such a humble young player. Doesn't take anything for granted. So excited to see how he continues to develop over the next couple of years. That puts you in the vast majority, if not unanimous, conversation among the Canucks fan base. There's not a lot of issues that will unite the Canuck fan base, Bick. Elias Pettersson is one of them, and what a goal he scored yesterday. What a game he had. For me, the best player on that ice surface yesterday, and that's saying something the way that Aho was playing in that game. The Svechnikov goal, Quinn Hughes, the guy who goes around, what hands in tight. It was a very, very entertaining game yesterday, and for me, Elias Pettersson was the best player on the ice.
Yesterday was the culmination of a lot of strong games put together, even after the All-Star break. That first St. Louis game, when they came back, he was very noticeable. And he's been, you know, not sputtering, but he's been producing, but he hasn't been noticeable on the score sheet. But he's been very noticeable doing a lot of other things. And there was that waiting, okay, when's he going to kick it up another gear and really start filling up the net? And, well, there you go, yesterday. That was, yeah, his best game of the season. It's up in that conversation. And as you suggested, best player on the ice yesterday.
55 points now in 53 games. He's been so remarkably consistent this year. We don't see the five-point game from Elias Pettersson. We saw a couple of those last year. But
I do feel like that's coming at some point.
Oh, I think that's coming. No question about it. But what do we see? We don't see more than two games without a point from Elias Pettersson. That's happened three times this year, but that's the longest drought he's had as far as points go. It is consistent, consistent, consistent. It's something he talked about after the season. It's something he worked hard on during the summer, and you're seeing it pay off. I know there's 29 games to go, and I know there's a level jump coming. That stretch drive through March is going to be tough. He looks so much better prepared for it this year than he did a year ago. And I started looking at some of the guys who are in that star/superstar category in the NHL. Listen, we know Ovechkin and Crosby and Malkin, those guys were point-per-game players in their first year, and they were in their second year as well. So that's a tier kind of unto itself. Pettersson wasn't a point-per-game guy last year. He was close, but he wasn't quite there. He's on pace to be a point-per-game guy. That's not something Kane did in his second year. That's not something Marner did in his second year. That's not something MacKinnon did in his second year.
Okay, I did this exercise in the offseason that we always get worried about a sophomore slump. There's only a handful of guys that have actually gone through a slump.
Yeah, like, I did the exact same exercise.
High-level guys.
Yep, I agree.
That you fear that always happening because it's been a long-term narrative going back, you know, a long time. And it was a reality. But now that we're in this...
We were reading from the same hymn book. I was exactly lockstep with you on that. It's not going to happen, man. Elite players don't go through that.
I coined the term sophomore jump. Let's get used to that idea that young players don't really do that anymore.
Yeah, I coined sophomore bump, so we can fight about which choice of consonant.
Jump is way better.
That's weak. It's weak. It's NBA. Let's go bump.
No, but it's the reality, right? More players have successful second seasons than not. Significantly more.
And yet, to be a point-per-game player in your second year is just another level of jump. And as I said, Kane, Marner, Panarin, Eichel, MacKinnon, none of those guys were able to do it.
What I said coming into the season is I wouldn't be surprised if there was 85 points. Anything beyond that, we're talking about, man, this is a crazy season, and then you can get excited and push him, start pushing him into those award conversations if those were so important to you. But he's on track to do exactly, you know, what I thought he would do, because that's what special players set out to do. They go to put up point-per-game seasons, and that's what he is now. He's a, as you're saying, superstar player.
But what's more important to me than the actual point total or the two goals yesterday is that here on February 3rd, the confidence level that when we have this conversation in March, we're going to be talking about the same level of consistency from Elias Pettersson. My confidence in that is sky high right now. He's added some muscle.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to get into a weight discussion with him again.
No.
But he just looks stronger out there. You talked last week about how he looks faster out there. It is a sturdiness to his game that wasn't quite there a year ago. And part of that was the learning process. You can talk all you want about it. And Quinn Hughes is going to go through this. You can talk all you want to Quinn Hughes about, hey, man, keep your energy level up. Make sure you're getting your sleep. Dude, until Quinn Hughes plays game number 67, he won't know how he handles it, and we won't know how he handles it. Because you don't know until you know. Pettersson found out, and to his credit, he was diligent enough to say, I got to be better. And that's what the great ones do. They find something to work on in their game, and they come back better in a particular aspect the next year.
Success at times isn't really random, right? Like, the elites of the elites know they have to go put in the work. We used to talk about Sidney Crosby, obviously, in his early seasons. There would always be those videos of, oh, he's in the basement shooting pucks into a dryer. And he's always working on something. And in the early stages of their career, you know, we didn't talk about Alex Ovechkin like that. And then suddenly, as their careers progressed, you saw Ovi put in the work, get, you know, 2% better at a little bit of everything. And then there came some defensive commitment. And look what that turned out to be for Alex Ovechkin. Overall team success. So success, you know, when guys put in the work, isn't really random. It's who's willing to put in that extra work. And Elias Pettersson's showing all the work they put in the offseason is now manifesting into having more energy, being more reliable in his consistent effort every single night.
Canucks pick up 5 points in their first 3 games of this road trip. It guarantees them a road trip of at least 500, at least NHL 500. Worst they can do is 2-2-1 coming home. Boston's going to be a tough game tomorrow. Always a difficult place to play. That Bruins team riding high, 74 points already on the season. And then it's Minnesota, a game that it's going to feel like the Canucks should win. They're tougher of an out this year than most people predicted, but there is very much reason to believe the Vancouver Canucks come home from this road trip with 3 wins.
Considering they just handled Minnesota recently, that obviously gives people
in Minnesota
a lot of off a back-to-back, if I'm not mistaken. So there's, you know, ways to finish this road trip off really impressively. And Sat made a good point before this 8-game run started. But, you know, going from St. Louis till basically that Nashville-Chicago game, 8-9 games, that's kind of going to define their season. Because if they come out of it with flying colors, suddenly that big March schedule that you're talking about is still important, but you could risk floundering in that spot because you've banked so many points.
All about breathing room, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's all about breathing room. They've got a little bit atop the Pacific, but they got a lot as far as the playoff bar now goes in the Western Conference. Scott Rintoul, Bick Nizar, the Battle of Alberta. You saw it on Saturday night. What do you make of those two teams coming out of this weekend? They're not going to play each other again until April 4th. I love the scenario that it sets up. We could see 8 in a row between them starting on April 4th. It would be incredible theater. What do you make of the Oilers right now? What do you make of the Flames right now?
The Flames, to me, still feel like they have the highest ceiling in the Pacific if their best players start playing like their best players. But they're running out of time to flip that switch.
Like more than Vegas? Or do you just mean between the Western Canadian teams?
Who has the higher ceiling? Yeah, I think Calgary does. Vegas, to me, needs one more guy.
Don't the Flames need one more guy?
But if Goudreau and Monahan start clicking, suddenly you have Giordano, you have Brody, you have Anderson, they've got all the pieces there.
Man, and they're minus 17 goal margin this year.
But to me, a lot of that rests on their star players to actually play like star players. So the solutions are internal, much like there was an expectation from the Vancouver Canucks to say, hey, we've brought in some pieces, but the main improvement is going to come from Elias Pettersson, Quinn Hughes, Brock Besser, and if they make that improvement, we'll be okay. That was a bet they made. The Flames have to have that same internal belief that I still expect them to make a move, but do they need a elite level player to improve them. Johnny Gaudreau should be producing a lot more. Sean Manahan should be producing a lot more. That needs to happen. Vegas still needs a D-man to me. But to take away from the Battle of Alberta, my main takeaway is Seattle. I hope you notice, because that's going to be a lot of fun when that happens. But as far as those two teams, you know, consistency is really important. And Edmonton is proving that they're not going anywhere. It's too difficult to slow down Connor McDavid for anyone.
And they're getting more saves than people thought they were going to.
Yeah.
They're going to need something from Koskinen because Mike Smith's at an age. And look, most goaltending situations around this league are at a point where you better be able to rest your guy that you've decided is going to be your starter. So they're still going to need that. But yeah, you're right. Edmonton's not going anywhere. And that team needed the game more, less from a standings perspective, but more from just an in-province season series with a division rival perspective than Calgary did, and they played that way. They'd lost the previous three games. Mm-hmm. There's no way they can sell getting swept by the Flames when they're trying to compete for one of the same playoff spots with that team. They needed that win. They got it. Milan Lucic, not much to say about him in either of those games. That's not going unnoticed in Calgary right now. There's a little feet being held to the fire there as far as Lucic goes in Calgary. People are wondering how much does it have to do with him being an Oiler these last few years and some personal relationships and not wanting to get involved. We all know there's no dance partner on the other side. There's nobody in his weight class. There's no Ryan Reeves sitting over there that he's going to fight. But he just wasn't noticeable. He just wasn't involved in any of it.
But isn't that kind of what his career has been for some time now? Like his reputation of what he is bigger than what he actually does now. That's just who he is.
I don't know. Earlier this year, he went and smacked a guy who went and poked at a rebound on Riddick. I mean, he got involved against the Columbus Blue Jackets and got two games for it, but he got involved.
Shows up every once in a while, but, you know, if the expectation is that's what you're supposed to do every single time you go out, that's not really what he's done for 2.5 years.
Well, most games don't call for it, quite frankly, in the regular season anymore. Most games don't call for it. And the reason that they're having the conversation in the Foothill City right now is that those two games were at a temperature where it's inviting it. Mm-hmm. And other players got involved in it, and he was conspicuously absent. That's why it's being called into question. And he can still author a different chapter. This team gets into the playoffs. Mm-hmm. That's the whole reason they made the trade. The whole reason they made the trade was we're going to be tougher to play against in the postseason, and time and space gets taken away. He can be a more effective player in that situation. So I don't believe the story's done with him there, but they're talking about it.
Are they also talking about Ronaldo then too?
Well, they're wondering.
It's his task too.
Listen, Corey Sarich said on their morning show today, would Zach Ronaldo fill that bill better? He's faster and he's willing to engage and he's not in the same weight class, so maybe there's a few more guys that are willing to dance or at least get into it with them. Would that be a better fit? And Sarge said, hey, Sarge was actually not coming down on Lucic as hard as some of the other people were, but he said, I'm here for that conversation. If that's the conversation we want to have, we can go down that road. Jeff Ward didn't want to get into it after the game on Saturday night, but it'll be interesting to monitor going forward.
Yeah, I'm just not sure what people are expecting out of Milan Lucic. Like, I feel like I see a couple of texts coming in. It's like he's basically done. He isn't going to be a goon. That's coming in from Duncan. And yeah, I'm just not sure if he's useful as a NHL player, at least relative to what he's getting paid. You know, there's an expectation that he does produce. If he's focusing on that part of his game, then that comes with the territory. And, you know, his value is also being available every night. Does he need to go? I guess he's kind of like their Louis Erickson to some degree. Is he too high up in the roster that he needs to do more? Does his role need to be minimized so he can be effective in a spot?
Things that are not popular to say right now, but of that class, is Louis Erickson playing the best hockey of that free agent class right now? Not popular, but I mean, factually accurate, isn't it?
Backes, Okposo, Lucic.
Ladd.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a good thing.
No. I mean, it's a good thing that he's playing better than those guys.
Yes.
It's not a great thing to have those contracts on your books.
But he's
playing better than those guys right now.
They're doing something. I have started to notice some slippage in his game.
No question about it.
Which was bound to happen.
There were a couple of chances against the Islanders, against the Carolina Hurricanes, where seemingly very simple plays for offensive opportunities needed to be made, and he just couldn't make them.
Mm-hmm. And actually also in the defensive zone of like getting the puck out. So I think we're coming to the tail end of that conversation, but it's one of those things that they needed someone to, you know, stem the tide a bit until Josh Leiva comes back or until they, you know, try to make an acquisition. He filled the role when it was absolutely necessary. And it's one of those things that they can go back to later on in the season if they absolutely need it, if, you know, if he's getting fatigued or something like that right now.
Two other conversations I want to get to before the end of Canucks Central today. Number one, Dustin Byfuglien, the news today. This is significant news that it looks like they're going to come to terms on a termination of Byfuglien's contract in Winnipeg at some point this week. And if they do that, the Jets are going to get themselves some salary cap relief. And Dustin Byfuglien is going to be an unrestricted free agent. Nobody really knows if he wants to play hockey anymore.
Yeah, that's the bigger conversation to me, yeah.
For sure it is. But there will at least be some finality to that situation, which all of a sudden makes Winnipeg a far more interesting team in the next few weeks leading up to the trade deadline than perhaps they would have been carrying around the uncertainty of Dustin Byfuglien.
Because people want them to be aggressive?
Because they have cap space to be aggressive, or more aggressive than they were before.
But they're still outside the play. Like, to me, that's a risk of them saying, hey, we're three or four points out. Do we go to try to do something? When, like, they have big issues. Like, what D-men are they going to acquire that fixes a lot of things there?
Or is it just a couple of D-men? I mean, this is a team, let's face it, went out on waivers and grabbed Lucas Spezza to play meaningful minutes on their blue line this year because they didn't have anybody else. That's the situation they've been in. So could I see them saying, yeah, we'll take a second or third tier defenseman that barely costs us anything for a fifth round draft pick to improve our chances of getting into the playoffs?
But those players don't usually have that level of impact, right? It's like they're not really getting top four guys unless they're paying huge costs to do that. And at that point, you're risking way too much. If they went out and acquired two top four guys, do they have the infrastructure to compete long term, or are they just doing it for a 1 year burn?
Well, and again, we'll see what type of deal Sheveldayoff goes to make, but we've seen him go in a couple of times the last 2 years, and he's been giving up first round picks. I don't see him doing that this season, but I could see at a lower value and maybe a lesser name value acquisition, Kevin Sheveldayoff saying, man, this team with a blue line that looks like a black hole relative to some of the teams we're in and around, we've been able to get here. With that goaltending and some of the talent we still have up front, I got to give these guys a little bit of a chance. Because as proven last year, get in. Who knows? I just think they're an interesting player all of a sudden. I don't know how big of a deal they can make, but it makes them a far more interesting player.
I'd be more excited about them in the summer. Like, because it's, I think Byfuglien had $6 million for a cash for next year, right? So that contract obviously comes off the books for next season as well. So in the summer, they become a major player, and that's interesting. But for what they can do right now, I would be really concerned trying to give up assets to make a very minor sprint here. Like, the bigger picture, they obviously have some age issues. Blake Wheeler's 33, but Connor, Laine, Scheifele, Ehlers, Morrissey, they're all right in that wheelhouse. They're going to be very difficult to deal with next season if they get significant help on the blue line for next year.
One last conversation. Alexander Ovechkin doesn't score yesterday against the Pittsburgh Penguins.
How dare he?
They lost that game 4-3. All scores, by the way, 4-3. All three games in the National Hockey League. He scores twice on Friday night. He's up to 37 in the season. He's just 1 point back of Pasta. Let's start with the here and now. Matthews, Pasternak, Ovechkin, who you got?
I'm going to be consistent because we had a roundtable and Cebulski asked me, this is, back in December, November, and you were just like, who do you think is going to win the Rocket Richard? And that time, Pasternak had a sizable lead.
Like, it was 6 to 7 goals was up.
And I just thought, you know, it's too much to, because he's not slowing down either. He's been consistent, but Ovi heated up. Well, he wouldn't believe. I still say Pasternak.
I went with Ovi at the time, so I will stick with that as well. I know he's getting 50, and he's going to get 50 again this year, and maybe Pasternak outpaces that, but I'm going to go with the known commodity. Sorry.
I wish I could change my vote. I'm doing it for the sake of consistency.
Okay, fair
I
enough.
Don't feel good about it, but I'm just doing it for the sake of me being consistent. This guy's unreal, man. Just anytime you try to put limitations on him, he just finds a way to prove you wrong. And again, he's going to put 50 up. And if he does 50 now, it eases the conversation, the math for himself later. It's like, oh, he needed to get 47 a season to catch Gretzky. Now it's going to come down. It's going to be like around 40 a season.
So let's say he gets 52 this year. That's not out of the realm possibility, is it? That's
not at all.
That's 15 more goals. He gets 52. He ends this year passing Mike Gartner, and he's at 710. 184 goals. If we downgrade him for the next couple of years, just because he's getting a little longer in the tooth, and say he gets 40 or 40-something the next couple of years, now we're talking about 100 goals.
Mm-hmm.
Which means if he stays healthy for 5 years beyond this season, he gets it.
And again, is that average 47, 46 goals a year? If he gets 52, like you said.
Oh, he doesn't have to have that many. Oh, no. It's far lower.
No, in 4 years.
In 4 years.
He could break it in 4 years.
Yes, he could break it in 4 years. But I'm saying if he stays healthy for five, he's getting it for sure.
Oh, if we're at a stage now. If he wants it, he's going to get it.
If the body is willing.
Yes.
If the body is willing. That's all it comes down to. It's not going to be about goal scoring rate anymore. It's just going to be about health.
Yeah, because if he plays five seasons, healthy seasons, he'll get it. Unless the scoring really craters, but he's not showing anything that it's going to. Like, there is no slippage. Like, he's going to get 52, like you said. There's no slippage right now.
Health is a good segue into what's coming up next. Hockey Gives Blood. Randeep Janda, Dan Riccio, they are on location out at UBC, so they're going to be coming to you from a remote location today. That program's on its way. What do you guys have coming up on the program? I imagine you'll talk a little Super Bowl.
Yes, we will. But also, because there's a game tomorrow, we won't have a show. Elliot Friedman will join us today.
Boom.
At 4 o'clock. Alex Auld, 4:30.
And you'll talk a little Super Bowl.
We will definitely do that.
Danny Kelly today?
No, he's traveling.
Okay.
But we'll definitely have some people. I didn't bring it up with you. I'm trying not to bring it up at all.
I appreciate that.
I've been there.
Wallow.
I've been there.
I've accepted it. At least it's at the hands of the guy who's probably going to define the next decade,
yeah,
in Patrick Mahomes. But yeah, this one won't go away. 2012 didn't go away, so why should this go away?
I'm very much a get over it type person. I'm not suggesting you have to.
Oh no, I'm not saying
but,
that. No.
Like,
it's still part
point,
of you.
At some point, you have to process it all. Because
I'm there.
I joke about Malcolm Butler a lot. And
yes.
For 49ers fans,
I'm going to joke about Emmanuel Mosley and Jimmy Garoppolo for a long time.
Yeah.
Of course. I
think it's important part of the fan process.
Yes.
To at some point get over it.
I'm over Canuck Central today. I'll see you tomorrow, buddy.
We'll see you tomorrow.
Reach Deep's coming up next, live on location at UBC. Thanks for listening. Scott Rintoul's show goes tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. We'll talk to you then on your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.